provided there. It's provided as a medical facility, but as Alison was saying, it's part of a Christian outreach. It's caring, but it's caring with love. And Tregurea is somewhere that we pray for continually throughout the year at Palmerston Place and at many other churches. The support of prayer is a real and genuine support that's needed. But also at this time of year, we do ask for financial support towards Tregurea Hospital, because that is also something that's needed. As Alison said, we helped towards the purchase of a new Toyota last year. A staff of 30 doesn't pay for itself. There are, if you want to make a donation, there will be envelopes available for, I have now forgotten the phrase. Gift aid. Thank you, John. So there will be gift aid envelopes available that are in the vestibule outside, and they're available this Sunday, but they're also available all throughout the month. And if you don't pay tax, that's fine. We can take money in other ways, but it is important. I know Alison feels uncomfortable about asking for money, but we do need money to help support Tregurea as well. It's not more important than our prayers. It's something additional to our prayers. And if you're not able to help with money, that's absolutely fine. And there is no expectation that everybody here is immediately putting their hands in their pockets. If you can, that would be lovely. If you don't feel that that's what you're being called to do, that's also fine. But we would ask, please pray for Tregurea, and please pray for God's message that is being embodied in a very real way through that hospital, which is caring with love. Peter brought us a reading from the first chapter of Jonah this morning, and we're going to be looking at the book of Jonah over the coming few weeks. I probably don't need to tell you a lot about Jonah. You probably know a lot about Jonah already. He is one of the most famous people in the Bible. People know about Jonah. People know the story of the whale. This is really quite a sensational short book. It's educational, it's prophetic, but one of the things that it really is that it's very visual. When you hear the story of Jonah and we read the chapters, you see pictures in your head. You know what's going on. This morning, you probably saw a cranky prophet thinking, I'm not doing that. And you probably saw him rushing to the boat and kind of bartering his way on. And the visual of the storm is a very strong one as well. And you can see these images in your head. But they're not just images. They're part of a wider story. And what does that story tell us? Well, really, there are two main characters in the story of Jonah. And those characters are Jonah, the prophet of God, and God himself. We might be able to think of this as some kind of parable, the kind of story that Jesus told, but it's not a parable. It's the story of someone's life, and this someone is Jonah. It's not a sentimental story, and it's not supposed to be funny. It's a straightforward, simple story told in simple language, and it just focuses on a few, to be fair, probably fairly brief moments in Jonah's life, moments which are particularly engaging. It's an effective story. You read the book, you see the images in your head. We don't learn an awful lot about Jonah in the story, but it's very clear that Jonah is a strong-willed person. He knows his own mind. Now, throughout these weeks, we're going to be looking at the prophet Jonah. He's a contemporary of a couple of other prophets in the Old Testament, Hosea and Amos. Hosea and Amos paint a pretty consistent picture. They prophesy continually against the kingdom of Israel and their king, that he's doing the wrong thing, that he's not following God. We don't get that sense about Jonah. Jonah's also mentioned in the book of 2 Kings, and he's not seen as being a relentlessly negative figure about Israel. And he probably is actually a nationalist, not in a kind of like Nazi party style nationalist, but somebody who's just pro-Israel, someone who wants to see God's good work being done in that kingdom. And that's probably why when God says, well, go and preach to Nineveh, to the Assyrians, because I've got a message for them. That's probably why Jonah thinks, I'm quite sure you have a message for them. And that message to them, well, your God, that message is going to get there. But it's not going to get there through me. At this time, there's quite a golden age of prophets in Israel. As I said, we've got Amos, we've got Hosea, and we've got Jonah, and they're all kicking around at round about the same time. There are lots of people whose names have come down to us this day, relatively, three different prophets, and any of them could have been sent by God to preach to Nineveh, to say, you need help. Jonah was the one that was chosen by God. Jonah wanted to be consistent about his own life. Jonah didn't want to go. And it's that conflict between what God wanted and what Jonah felt was kind of part of who he was. His message had been God's message, but it had generally been one that was in favor of Israel. Was his whole career going to be undermined by God in being sent to talk to the Assyrians? This is something that we're going to have to think about over our coming sermons and over our coming services as we look at Jonah. But before I dig into the verses in that, we have another hymn to sing, another chance to worship our God. So let's stand and sing our next hymn. I wasn't really sure what I was going to say to you this morning about Jonah. I said, he's a really famous character. And I read lots of commentaries, and I took lots of notes. I've actually got 47 pages of notes in front of me on my computer. So I hope you've got no plans for the rest of this afternoon. Well, no, because I said, I didn't really know what it was that I wanted to focus on, what God wanted me to focus on. But I did feel that it was important that Jonah knew he wasn't the only person of God that was around at this time. And I think that's why he ran away. He didn't run away because he thought the message wasn't going to get to the Assyrians. He didn't run away because he thought God won't be able to find me if I go further west. I think he just thought there are easier people to do this. And there are people who are going to find it less personally embarrassing to deliver this message to Assyria. What Jonah was known as was the pro-Israel prophet of God at this time. And he probably said to himself, God has decided to give Assyria a chance, but it should be someone else that's sent to Assyria to let them know that. For me to go, it stands against all that I've stood for. If I withdraw from my people and I exile myself, I put myself somewhere far away from my people Israel, surely God will send someone else. Surely he'll prefer a willing prophet to me. And then I won't have to be the agent and I won't have to see happening in front of me something I've worked all my life to try and stop happening coming to pass. Jonah probably didn't think he was essential to God's work. He wasn't essential in God's wheel of revelation. He didn't think God's plan would be thwarted by Jonah running away. He just didn't want to be a part of something that was for him so horrible as mercy being shown to a sometimes brutal, oppressing enemy nation. There's a lot that I could say about this, but I'm not going to. What I think I want to focus on is the storm, because that's the big visual image in what we read this morning and what Peter read for us. God clearly causes a storm to very suddenly appear. And that storm is the catalyst for everything else that happens in this first chapter of Jonah. That storm and the resulting actions that that storm creates on board the ship have a kind of four-part outline. The storm begins, and sailors rush to prevent the sinking. They gather everything they can, and they throw it overboard. They try and make their ship as light as possible. They try and make it something that's not going to accidentally tip over. They try to say, can we weather this storm? Secondly, the storm continues, and they think, this isn't a normal storm. A God is behind this. And I say, a God, because it's clear that this ship is populated by people who aren't Hebrews. They're people probably from many different nations and states, different peoples with different gods. And they think a God is behind this. Which God? Well, it could be any of our gods. Each of these people probably had their own national gods. They probably had kind of community gods. A lot of them probably had their own personal gods, deities that they'd encountered throughout their lives that they thought, that God has helped me, so I think that is my God. But Jonah knows that's not the case. And as much as he doesn't want to be God's prophet in Nineveh, he does speak God's truth to the people in front of him. Lots are cast by whatever means, we don't know. And those lots are guided by God, and it correctly determines to all the people on board that Jonah is the source of the problem. And so they naturally ask Jonah, well, which of all these gods is your God? And Jonah explains to them, there is only one God, the God of heaven, a description that's used to people who don't know Israel's God to try and explain to them that this God, my God, is the God of heaven, so the supreme God, the God of all gods, the only genuine God. And they say, well, you know this God, we don't know this God. You have to tell us what we need to do to calm this storm. And Jonah's answer is, I need to be sacrificed. This storm has happened because my God is angry with me. And this gives a quandary to the sailors in the boat. They know they have a man of this God on their boat. They know this God is angry with this man. And they know that this man is telling them, I need to be sacrificed. But they also know that this man is going to be protected by that God, because that's naturally what gods do to their followers. They protect him. They don't want to sacrifice Jonah. Now, it's not out of something that we might think nowadays of, well, I don't want the blood on my hands. I don't want to be responsible for that. There must be some other way. Let's just try and get him to the shore. And maybe there we can, you know, sort something out. No, their reaction is, yep, he needs to die, but he's not going to die by our hands because we don't want your God then blaming us for your death. We want to save ourselves too, so they try to pull to the shore, because if they can dump him on the shore and abandon him there, they've not actively killed him, but they've also not done anything to help him. They hope at that moment that Jonah's God will ignore their part in the whole thing, and he'll concentrate his anger on Jonah. And so they pull to the shore. But the storm is getting worse. Because this isn't an actual storm. This is a divine storm. This is something that God has created. He's created to make his will known, not just to Jonah, but to all the people on this boat. They need to know and they need to understand that the God of heaven is the real God. So, reluctantly, the sailors throw Jonah over the side, and there's calm. There is calm. And they understand that this God of Jonah is a powerful God. They may not think he's the only God, but they recognize that actually this is a God that we need to pay attention to. And they go, and they sacrifice to him. And they have no idea what's happened to Jonah. Jonah, for them, has been sacrificed, and Jonah's God has been satisfied. Now, at this point, I would say, come back next week, find out what happens to Jonah. But we all know that Jonah's story doesn't end there. Whether you come to church or not, you know one thing about Jonah, and that is the whale. And we've not mentioned the whale yet, so something is still to come. Come back next week to find out what that something is. But when you leave here today, take as the message that God is powerful, and he's powerful whether you're with him or against him. So go with him. Life will be easier. I'm going to ask Lisa to come up and pray.